In its guidance, TASB recommends that school administrators talk with students and parents about appropriate accommodations. In instances where children ask district employees not to tell their parents about their gender identity, the guidance advised school officials to proceed with caution, in accordance with district policy. Ultimately, the best advice is to assess each situation as it comes, working closely with the student, parents, and district council to reach a resolution that protects the learning environment for all, the guidance states. The advice drew rebuke from the Texas Freedom Caucus, a group of hardline conservative lawmakers. In a letter to Paxton on Tuesday, Representative Mac Schaefer, Republican Tyler, who chairs the caucus, accused TASB of advising districts to subvert parental rights by not sharing information about a child's gender identity. Schaefer is among several Republican lawmakers who have filed more than four dozen bills targeting LGBTQ people, according to Equality Texas. The bills include measures that would limit classroom instruction about sexuality and gender identity and gender-affirming care for transgender youth. For the rest of the story, go to texastribune.org. This is Steve Gallington of the People's News, which can be heard on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. on 90.1 KPFT HD2, Houston's community radio.
Pacifica owned and listener supported for over 50 years. This is 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1, Houston.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. That means it's 6 p.m. on a Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story? We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Keene, backed up by the most talented team on radio, and here at So What's Your Story, we bring to you every week storytellers who bring us on magical journeys before landing us safely back into the present. In Native American communities, people tell legends, folk tales, and fables. They tell these stories for many reasons: to recount the history of their people, to tell where they came from, to relate the exploits of a particular hero.
Well, our guest here is Robert Lewis. Robert is an award-winning Native storyteller, author, and artist of Cherokee, Navajo, and Apache descent. Robert works for the Cherokee Nation as a school and community specialist. And as part of the Cherokee Nation Cultural Outreach Program, Robert travels the country to perform before a wide variety of Native, school, college, museum, festival, and art market audiences. Hey, Robert, it's great to have you here.
It's good to be here.
All right. So now you're a storyteller, and we've never had you on the show before, but we saw a little bit about you, so we thought, hey, let's get this guy on and see what he's all about.
That sounds wonderful. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Robert, I see you do a lot of traditional Cherokee folk tales, but do you also do like personal narratives, other kind of, what all kinds of storytellings do you do, and what do you like to do best?
Usually when I start a program, it's a little introduction about myself, and then I go a little bit of detail about my family, a little bit of where I grew up. Sometimes there's a personal story involving with the family. There's one about a bear that I tell about my dad. And then I'll lead on to an eagle that got me into college. And then I'll lead on to how art eventually led me to museums, and that eventually led me to storytelling.
Well, let's just get right into it.
All right. I grew up in a little town called Salina, Oklahoma. Small little town. I was the shyest person in the class. I didn't say a word to anybody. I was very quiet. I was very shy. But I love to read and I love to draw. Art is my first love. As a child, I drew on everything. Paper sacks, notebook paper, the wall, which is bad. Not supposed to draw on the wall. As I got older and I got better and better, children I went to school with realized that I liked to draw a lot. And sometimes they would give me things to draw. And so I would sit there and I'd draw it for them. Sometimes it'd be a Snoopy on a little notebook paper. Girls always wanted hearts or unicorns or something like that. The boys wanted somebody with a sword or like a motorcycle or a car. So I would do little drawings and things like that. I would sit there and hear stories from my dad. And my dad was, who's Navajo and Apache, would tell these stories from time to time. And you just didn't know when he was going to talk. He would just start talking. One time we were on a trip to Arizona, and it was the first story I ever learned. And on the way to Arizona, we stopped at the Panhandle of Texas. And you're from Texas, and anybody who's been to the Panhandle of Texas, it's flat, and there's a cow walking by. That's about it. But we're sitting there waiting. My dad's resting because he's the only one driving. My mom didn't drive. Me and my brothers are sitting outside. I'm 7 years of age. I'm looking at the stars, and I grew up in a town, so you hardly saw stars. You could see stars pretty well when you got a little way from the town, but not like you could see them when you're out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting out there, and they're filling the sky. My dad's looking at me, and he sees that I'm gobsmacked. I'm staring at the sky. And he says, "Do you know how the stars got in the sky? Sit down. This is how the stars got in the sky." And he told me this amazing story about a coyote. And it goes like this. A long time ago, the creator of everything was looking at the animals. And the creator noticed something. The animals are sitting there, and they're being nice to each other and kind to each other. But at night, when it got dark, nobody could see anything. It was so dark, you couldn't see like your hand in front of your face. And all of us have experienced that. You couldn't see anything with your hands in front of your face. And it was that dark because there's nothing in the sky. And the creator noticed all the animals were bumping into things, trees, rocks, tripping and falling in creeks, bumping into skunk. That's bad. Not supposed to bump into skunk. So the creator says, "I'm going to fix this." So the creator draws a map and draws all of the animals and the fish and the birds and the bugs and the plants on this map. Draws a beautiful pattern all the way around it and all the way through it. The creator of everything says, "I need somebody to help me get these stars up in the night sky," and gets Coyote out of his den. Coyote says, "What do you want?" "I want you to put the stars up in the night sky for me." And the coyote says, "What are stars?" And the creator says, "I'm going to show you. I want you to hold open this big pouch." So the coyote holds open this big pouch. The creator of everything reaches up, grabs light from the sun, and puts all these small pieces of light inside that bag. The coyote looks inside the bag and says, "Wow, those are beautiful. They glisten. They shine. They look like all my girlfriend's eyes." And the creator says, "You have that many girlfriends, huh? Well, I want you to put them in the sky for me." The coyote says, "Wow, how am I supposed to get up there, creator? I don't have any wings. I'm not a bird. A bird would help me out better, unless you're going to give me eagle wings. That would look really cool. A coyote with eagle wings. Imagine all the girlfriends I'll get. Coyote with eagle wings flying by." The creator of everything tells Coyote, "Calm down. You're not going to get any wings. I've given out all the wings. I'm going to do this for you." The creator of everything reaches up and down and touches a plant. The plant begins to grow, gets as big as a city, goes all the way up to the top of the sky. The coyote watches it growing. And the coyote looks at the creator, and the creator says, "Climb up this plant. This is my map. Has everybody on it. Follow it. You must put up all my stars. There's a pattern I've created. Look at all the lines and swirls. It's a beautiful pattern. I want my pattern, and I want my animals, and my fish, and my birds, all in the night sky. So everybody can see things at night. Come out, enjoy beauty. And won't be bumping into skunk anymore." The creator sits there and says, "I must go off. I must do creator things." The coyote begins to climb and climb and climb and gets all the way up to the top of the sky and begins to put up the stars. As he's laying out the stars, in the evening, when the animals came out, they began to see light in the night sky. They began to see a little bit better, and they began to look around. Bear became excited first because Bear says, "Look, bears are in the night sky. We're up there. Look how beautiful we are. We will have much dancing and much singing." The next night, scorpions come out and says, "Look, scorpions are in the night sky." And if you look, you'll see a scorpion in the night sky. "Scorpions are beautiful. Look how powerful we are. That's how large we are in our spirit." Scorpions are excited. They begin to dance. Night after night, animal after animal gets to come out and see themselves in the night sky. Wolves are out seeing themselves in the night sky. Deer sees themselves in the night sky. Otter, turtle, the people of the earth come out and they say, "Behold, we're in the night sky. Look, I have a bowl." One of the women says, "Look, I have a piece of pottery in my hands. This is beautiful." The coyote puts up all the animals, fish, birds, bugs, plants in the night sky. The coyote begins to work on the creator's pattern and looks at it and says, "This is hard. This is complicated. I'm getting tired. I need to go home. My girlfriends keep looking at my cousins. I need to get out of here. But I got to finish the creator's pattern. So the coyote begins to work and work and work and work and work some more. Eventually, finishes one part of the creator's pattern. It's a line of stars that's still in the night sky, goes all the way across. The coyote looks at the rest of the pattern and says, look at these swirls. This is too complicated. This is good enough. Most of the kids, this is good enough. And he comes all the way back down. But he still has a bag full of stars. He hasn't finished the creator's swirls and pattern up there. So the coyote says, I better hide these. So he takes them to the lake and throws them at the lake. They go towards the water. And just before they touch the water, they scatter across the night sky, just like fireworks. And all the animals are, whoa, look at that. The coyote goes home and goes to bed. The creator of everything comes back. And the creator's excited. Sun's going down. And the creator's sitting there talking to the animals. I'm excited. We're going to see the stars in the night sky. The stars told me they're all up in the night sky. I did not expect the coyote to be finished this soon. This is wonderful. He worked hard. There's my bear. He's the bear in the night sky. There's my scorpion, powerful and brave. My people of the earth. As more stars begin to appear, the creator says, there's my person. I can kind of see my wolf. It's hard to see otter. I barely see turtle. I see my gourds, my little one and my big one, but this isn't what I wanted. I see my little pattern. There's a line of stars. Where's my big one? Where's my swirls? What happened? This is not what I wanted. This is a mess. Coyote! And coyote comes running out. And the creator says, look what you did. And the coyote looks up at the night sky and says, yeah, I got tired. The creator says, no, you got lazy. You must finish what you start. I must remind you of this. The creator reaches down, grabs some mud, makes a ball and puts it up in the night sky and turns it blue and white. It begins to glow. All the animals and people look at it and go, ooh. The coyote says, wow, that's beautiful. What is that? The creator of everything looks at coyote and says, that is the moon. When you see the moon and the sun in the night sky, coyote, you must sing to me. And this is why coyotes howl at dawn and dusk and why your stars are scattered across the night sky.
Well, that is a great story, Robert. I like how it all came together in the end there, even how the coyotes are howling at the moon. That's how we know that's going on. That's great.
Yeah. My dad told me that when I was 7 years of age.
That was the first story you remember, huh?
The first story I remember. I never forgot it. He sat there. We finished the story. I'm staring at the night sky. I'm looking at all the stars. We get in the car. We start heading to Arizona. I am fortunate by the fact that I began to ask my dad questions. And sometimes when parents are doing things, they get tired. They say, I'll talk to you later. I'll do this later. My dad, very patiently, he answered all my questions. He didn't realize. He just thought I was a little kid asking questions. What I wanted is I wanted this story. I wanted it so bad that I wanted it inside my head and my heart to carry around with me. Mm-hmm. And I was shy. But by the time we got to Arizona, I had the story down, patting my head. And so whenever we went shopping or if we were at the laundromat or something and you got to go with your mom and dad and they're doing laundry, I'm sitting over in the corner all by myself or with my little brother playing with little dinosaurs. And in the back of my head, I'm going, a long time ago, the creator of everything wanted stars in the night sky. And I would pull that story out every once in a while. Did it once in college. There's a Illinois River over here by the college. I teach at this college in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. But when I went to school up here, there's a river runs up my side and all the college kids go to the river. So we're hanging out there. There's fire going. Somebody's singing Kumbaya in the corner with a guitar. And somebody starts telling ghost stories, trying to scare the girls. And somebody says, does anybody know any other stories? And I says, I do. I know one about a coyote putting stars in the night sky. And I say, well, it's starry night. Why don't you tell us? And I tell my dad's story. When I finished, they'd all say, well, that's cool. And they'd stare at the night sky. Eventually, I start working in museums. And then I pull that story out to tell to a group of fourth graders to calm them down before they took a tour. Mm-hmm. As fate would have it, somebody saw me from the museum. When I finished that story and they all went inside, her woman's name, Barbara Gertie, came running out. She says, I did not know you were a storyteller. Next thing I know, they start offering storytelling at the museum. And I got to be the storyteller. They said, how many do you know? I said, I know a couple. They said, you better go get some more. So I started going to gather more stories. I got about 150 in my head.
Wow. But say you first heard that story when you were seven. But then it wasn't until you're in college that you really started becoming a storyteller. Is that how it worked? What happened in all those years? Was it just kind of building up in you, or what was it?
It wasn't until after I graduated. I was working at this museum. I was given a tour guide. People from all over the world would come to the Cherokee Heritage Center when it was open. COVID has kind of stopped that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, when the museum was open and I worked out there, I'd get visitors every day. And it came from, we get about 100 different countries. Every year they'd show up. And people from all over the United States would show up. People in Tahlequah would have trouble finding a museum, but Sergi over there from a different part of the country or different part of the world, he'd find it, no problem at all.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd bring him inside. I'd show him around, give him a tour. And then as fate would have it, one day I told that story. And I just told it just to calm the kids. I didn't think anything about it. Mm-hmm. That started me as a storyteller.
So how do you mainly stick there at the campus? Or I see here that you'll travel around to schools and museums and so forth as well, right? Do you keep pretty active out there telling stories everywhere?
Yes, pretty much. My schedule gets booked. Before COVID, it was like booked like almost a year in advance. Wow. They have schools and communities and everything. And my calendar was filled all the way up. When I have children, I do storytelling. Says, how can do you do this? That would get asked that from the child out there in the audience. And I sit there, I said, how many days are there in a year? And they would tell me like 360. They would tell me what number it was. And I look and I says, well, I'm working 300 of them. The other ones, holidays, schools are closed for like two, or there's like a half a month in August and half in December. But the rest of it's filled up with somebody, something's going on.
Yeah.
Tell them, especially the native kids. I said, this is a pretty good gig. I talk, I tell stories. And they send me everywhere from New York to Washington, D.C. to Smithsonian to Seattle.
Have you been overseas as well?
Play in a few weeks. So,
have you been to other countries, Robert?
I got invited. Matter of fact, there was a storytelling session that was at the 50th anniversary, St. Louis storytelling session. They invited me. They said, we have other storytellers. I expect you to see other native storytellers. I get there, I'm the only native storyteller. They met was they had storytellers from around the world. They had a Japanese storyteller, an Irish storyteller, German. They had a person from Italy, Africa. And we were all telling stories, and I got to join in with them. But when I finished, all those storytellers from different countries said, you should come to our country. They would love hearing your stories. Because what I do is I pull the children out in the audience, and I involve them with the story. They get to be the bear or the wolf or the panther or the deer or the rabbit or the turtle. And I give them lines to say, and they mimic the story. They pantomime the line behind me. And then they're sitting there, and they're basically presenting the story as characters in the story, almost like a play. And all their classmates are watching, laughing and giggling at them or enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah. Do you find that really brings them into the story more if they participate in it?
If they participate, yes. I found that it works out really well. And I did a storytelling session in Houston, Texas, and one time, a man came walking up, and he was doing studies on the human brain. The human brain learns different ways. One way they learn is auditory. One's visual. I'm visual. I have to learn that to see something. Mm-hmm. Some are tactile. You got to touch it. But they said there's another way when he was testing people that the neurons would fire in people's synapses, their brains, if you actually physically involved them in something they were doing. Some other part of your brain would kick into gear and it would start to flash. And it would learn that way. Mm-hmm. And he said, you stumble onto this because when you pull kids out, they remember it. And I've gone to schools maybe once or twice in maybe a couple of years. And then I won't see that school or that program because somebody else changes jobs and they forget to call me. Mm-hmm. And then I'll run into some child who's now like 15 years have gone by and say, hey, you came to my school once. You made me be a bear. You had me telling me something I did with them once, maybe 15 years ago. Wow. And it's still in my head.
That must be rewarding, Robert.
It is.
You mentioned this neurobrain thing. I read about that recently, that they have done these studies where they'll study the human brain while it's listening to a story, and they'll kind of track it so that you can see the lights light up in the parts of the brain. And when the teller and listener are in sync, it's like a mirror. I mean, the brain images, it's like you're watching two things on the same screen. You can see the story shared by the teller and the listener.
That's wonderful. That's something I'm going to hang on to.
It's fascinating.
So when I'm out there and I'm actually physically involving those kids and all of them watching, all their brains are kicking in the same spot. That's great.
Yeah, sounds like you do it pretty well, because the kids, I've seen the videos, they get really absorbed in the story. So
The funniest aspect of that happened one time when I went to the Shawnee Nation and invited me to come do storytelling in Missouri. So I went there and the chief had asked me to come, says, "We're having a Christmas program. Would you come tell some stories?" Every year we get somebody new. One year we had a magician. One year we had somebody doing like dances, but it's for the kids. And then when Santa Claus comes here, don't worry. The kids will leave you. They'll run to Santa Claus. You'll be done then. You can eat. Okay.
So I'm can't doing my compete story. With Santa Claus, huh?
Yeah, I can't compete with Santa Claus. So I'm doing my story test session. I'm sitting there. The kids are enjoying it. And then, lo and behold, the door opens. Here comes Santa Claus. Comes in. Ho, ho, ho. I look at all those kids. I said, "Santa's here." And they all turned as a unison, looked at Santa, turned and looked back at me and said, "Go on with the story."
Oh, man.
And none of them. No, it's not there. And I kept talking. And so you could see Santa looking like, "This has never happened before. They didn't come to me." And he's sitting there trying to talk to the teacher over there. And the chief's going, "I don't know what happened either." Uh-huh. But I finished that story. And he said, "Can we have another one?" I said, "Santa Claus is here. He's got your presents." And I finally had to scoot over there because they wanted to hear more. They didn't want to stop.
Well, so I feel bad for Santa Claus there, Robert. But it is good to see the children get immersed in stories like that. That is fantastic.
Well, we are going to take a break from our stories right now for station identification, and to make a few announcements. This is Eric Heen, and you're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM radio in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. And this is what is happening in the story world in the Houston area, even as we speak. First of all, our sponsor is the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild holds virtual story swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month, and everybody's is welcome to tune into those. For more on how about to participate in these story swaps, go to HoustonStorytellers.org and find out all about the Storytellers Guild. And while you're on that very same website, you can go to our page for this radio show, So What's Your Story? There you can find out more about us, and you can see our story archives dating way back to 2008. And we're also on Facebook. So you can just go to So What's Your Story on Facebook. You can see our weekly updates and all kinds of good stuff. And don't forget to like us before you leave. And our friends at the Moss Storytelling Organization, they meet the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live on Emmanuel Street. Now, Robert, I just want to mention this first story you told about. It's kind of a creation story, isn't it? It's like, yeah. I notice a lot of Native American stories have that theme. They'll sort of explain where things came from. Where did the stars come from? So is that like an example of a creation story for the Cherokee?
Yes, it is. There's a creation story that the Cherokees have. There's a story that has with the Navajos had with that creation story. Mm-hmm. The creation story for the Cherokees with that one involves a dog. About one time they were sitting there and there was a woman. She was an old woman. She was making like cornmeal for her family. And she was sitting there. She's working on the cornmeal. She's got it out. She's got to set it outside to let it cool. And she goes to do something else. And it's in the evening. And so she sits there and she gets up a little bit later on from what she's doing, comes out there and it's gone. It's knocked on the ground. It's just knocked over. She's like, "What happened? Who came and got my cornmeal?" So she's all mad and she's looking around. She notices these enormous dog footprints sitting there. Mm. And so she's saying, "That's a big dog. It's almost like the size of a small child. Somebody would have seen that." So she began to ask around. Nobody said, "No, we didn't see anything. We could smell your cornbread, but is it any good?" And they said, "No, it's gone." And so she's mad. And so she said, "Well, I'm going to make some more. Everybody keep a lookout for this dog." And so everybody's sitting there and they're watching. She puts the cornmeal out to let it cool. They all hide. And then somebody notices a light across the sky. It's beginning to glow and it begins to drop and get lower and lower. And it gets bigger and bigger and they're watching. And as it starts to get lower and lower, all of a sudden it lands. It doesn't make a sound, but it starts to glow. And that glow gets closer and closer to that cornmeal. And then it assumes the shape of a huge, enormous dog. And it begins to eat. Starts to eat that cornmeal. So they look at each other. "It's a dog. Look." And so they sat there and said, "We got scared away." So they all get out their weapons, start yelling and whooping, "Yee!" And he's chasing that dog. And you just get his dog scared. He starts to run everywhere. He's got a mouthful of cornmeal. He's dodging and ducking in between houses and the villages, and everybody's chasing him, screaming at him, especially the old woman whose cornmeal he had. And eventually he jumps and leaps up into the air, and he begins to float again and disappears, turns to a ball of light. And as he's running, they could watch all that cornmeal starts falling out of his mouth. And he keeps on running until before too long, there's this line of cornmeal across the sky. Ooh. And that's the way. So Cherokees call it, that's where the dog ran.
Ah, that explains the Milky Way, is where the dog ran.
Yep. So yeah, there's variations. They do stories about creation things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stories in the stars. I know if you go all over the world, everybody will have their own stories. The Native Americans explain the constellations a certain way. And it's funny how they kind of overlap. I mean, there could be a civilization halfway around the world with very similar stories.
Yeah, very similar. There's lots of different tribal people around the world, and they all have a trickster. There's a trickster in everybody's story. Amongst Cherokees, it's a rabbit. Navajos,
booty. Yeah, we had a show not too long ago dedicated to tricksters, and there was a Cherokee, a Chuji kingfisher. Maybe you know.
Yeah, that's my cousin.
He's your cousin. Yeah, I could kind of tell some resemblance there in your voices. Yeah, so you know him well. Yeah, he was on, and we did trickster stories, and they were great. Now, do you have any trickster stories up your sleeve, so to speak?
Oh, it's all of the rabbit.
The rabbit.
We call it Jistu. Yeah, Jistu in Cherokee. Rabbit would cause trouble and mischief. Rabbit would get in trouble. I'd have to figure out some way to get out of it. Mm-hmm. One day, rabbit was sleeping. And as he's sleeping, he's having a dream. And in this dream, as he's sleeping, he's dreaming about pretty girls. These pretty girls start petting his fur and playing with his ears and rubbing his belly. And he's just a grinning. And while he's sitting there grinning, one of the girls whispers in his ear, I'm going to nibble on your ear. And his ear starts to twitch. And he starts to smile even more. But instead of nibbling, that girl in his dream bites his ear. And he jumps up and says, ow, don't bite me so hard. That hurt. He jumps up, rubs his eyes, expecting to see pretty girls around him because of his dream. But he's surrounded by wolves. Oh. And it's the wolves that have been checking to see if he's good to eat. They're rubbing his fur. So the lead wolf says, we're hungry. We want to eat. We haven't had anything to share except a bug. We want to eat right now. If you don't have any food to give us, you're going to die. And so Rabbit begins to think really fast and says, wait. I was having a dream. The wolves say, we don't care about your dream. We're starving. We're hungry. We want to eat. We're going to take you apart. And Rabbit says, wait. Don't talk about taking me apart. It hurts me. How about this? My dream was about singing and dancing. Rabbit's the best singer and dancer in the entire world. All of the wolves know this. So the lead wolf says, teach us this song. And the other wolves say, we might let you live if we like it and if we can dance to it. But if we can't dance to it, you're going to die. We're going to eat you right now. So Rabbit Sister pulls out a little rattle, begins to shake it, and begins to dance and sing for his life. As he's dancing and singing, yee, yee, the wolves begin to howl. Burr, burr. And Rabbit says, whoa, you guys are doing the dance wrong. You're singing it wrong. The wolves look at each other and said, we're doing like you're doing. We're hopping around. We're jumping. My knees are popping like my grandpa's. What's going on? And Rabbit says, wait. You got to sing to the creator. When you sing to the creator, you must use your voice. You must sing loud so the creator can hear you. So the wolves sit there and they look at each other. They start to sing. And Rabbit says, wait. You got to fix everything else. You must raise your paws to the creator. Raise your paws. So all the wolves raise their paws and they start to sing. Rabbit says, wait. Something else you got to do. You got to stomp your feet hard. Stomp your feet. Shake that earth. Make the creator hear your feet as you're dancing. And so the wolves begin to dance and they're sitting there shaking their feet. Heads up in the air, and then Rabbit says, wait, one more thing. You must be humble before the creator. You must bow your head and close your eyes. Mm. So all the wolves bow their head and close their eyes, and they begin to howl. And Rabbit takes off. After the wolves sing for a little while, and then they open their eyes and look around. Hey, that rabbit's gone. It got away. And one wolf says, I know, but I like that song. We should sing it some more. Make Rabbit come back. Maybe he'll teach us some more songs. So all the wolves gather and they all begin to howl. This is why wolves howl in the evening, because they want Rabbit to come back and teach them some more songs.
Oh, that's a great one. I love it, Robert.
Usually when I do that with school kids, I say, all the kids got to help me sing. and I make them all howl.
They get up and dance and all that too?
Yep, they get up and dance too.
Oh, that'd be something to see. Yeah, so the Cherokee Trickster is this rabbit. What is it? Teekstu? What is his name?
Jistu.
Jistu. So yeah, he kind of uses his wits to outwit the wolves and get out of being eaten. There are other animals, though. I know in other tribes, I think, isn't a coyote a trickster in some tribes? Yeah. Too?
Coyote is a trickster amongst the Navajos and some of the Southwestern.
They're kind of basically the same character, only different animals.
Plains tribe have a character by the name of Sane Day. Jake Jagesa, he's passed on. He's not here with us anymore. But he was a Kiowa teacher and professor at the college. But he was a wonderful storyteller. And he told these stories about Sane Day. His stories when I was in college, never knowing that I was eventually going to become a storyteller.
Wow. So do you have a favorite kind of story, Robert, or do you just kind of love them all and they come from your heart and you just tell what you feel like telling at the time?
Yeah, I tell the children, because when I pull them up to become involved with it, some of them will say, "Oh, what am I going to be? Am I going to be a wolf? Am I going to be a bear?" And I'm pulling them up one at a time. And I'm looking at them. I said, "I really have no idea. I have 150 stories in my head. I don't know which one's going to come out till I get them all standing up there." As one comes up, as I'm sitting there talking with these children, I said to her, "I'll just start talking. It might be a child who's wearing a shirt, has a bear on it. I'll tell a bear story. Sure. I'll turn to a girl out there walking around, and she might remind me of somebody I knew in school, and I'll tell a story concerning that. Sure. Might be an eagle on my way driving to that school. I'll tell an eagle story. It might be raining. I'll tell a thunder and lightning story."
I think that's the best way to tell a story. Just be spontaneous. You're not up there scripted saying, "Well, I'm going to tell this story, then I'm going to tell that story." It just whatever comes into the moment.
Yeah, I had an event one time where a woman came running up. "Mr. Lewis, we're so excited to have you. Could you give me a list of the stories you're going to tell me? I could put them up there on the screen." I looked at her and said, "I have no idea." And the look on her face was hilarious. She just, her skin just went white. She's like, "Oh my gosh, we got him here. He's got 300 people. He doesn't know what he's going to say." I said, "He'll be all right."
Yeah, that's why before the show, I wasn't worried. I said, "Hey, let's just let this guy kick loose, set him free.
We'll be fine. It'll be okay."
Yeah. So any other stories come to mind, Robert? Anything come from your heart right now? Did you see something today you'd like to talk about? What's going on?
I was sitting with a friend of mine, Gina Burnett. And one day she was reading a newspaper and she was sitting there and she's getting disgruntled. And I looked at her and says, "What's wrong, Gina?" She says, "Everything that's bad going on in the world. You got to come up with a story about this. Come up with something so that people will stop being so bad to each other. There's all this conflict with each other. Why is that going on?"
Yeah.
I looked at her. I looked at the ground. I saw something crawling. And I said, "A long time ago, there's a group of giants. They're as tall as trees. And these giants' job was put down here by the creator to take care of the earth and everything else. And they did that at the beginning. They were taking care of the earth, the plants, and everything else. The giants even found this black liquid that they could set there and they would make colors from it. So they ground these colors and put them on their faces. The red giants, the blue giants, the black giants, the white giants, brown giants, the yellow giants. And they had all these colors on their faces and marking themselves out. As time grew on, they were sitting there. They began to mark off territories. And at first, they shared everything, water and food. But as their small towns began to big, vast cities, they began to become more stingy. And they began to hold everything together. And they began to look at each other and say, "This is our territory. Don't come over here. This is our water. Don't come over here. That black liquid belongs to us. We use it for our colors. You can't take it." Before too long, skirmishes broke out. And these huge giants, the tallest trees, began to have wars. Violence broke out, and they began to battle amongst each other. First, it would be the black giants against the brown giants. Then it would be the red giants against the yellow giants. And as they're sitting there fighting more and more, the animals began to ask for help. Even the tricksters couldn't stop them. Raven, rabbit, and coyote could not stop the giants. So they began to appeal to the creator of everything. "Creator, you put the giants here to help the earth, but look, they're tearing everything apart. Everything's burning. They're having fights and wars all the time. Help us. They're going to wipe out everything. They're eating way too much. They're taking way too much." The creator of everything comes down and says, "Giants, I've come to give you all a gift. Come with me." So all the giants meet in this huge council house. And when they crawl inside there, the creator of everything says, "Giants, I've come decided to give you all a gift. Since you want to fight so more, and since you cannot be sitting there all the time in peace, and you're always wanting to go and battle against each other, I'm going to make it so that you can have war all the time. I'm going to color you the colors you've all chosen for markings on your faces and on your bodies. You will wear this color all over your bodies. And before too long, all the giants turn all red, all black, all white, all brown, all yellow. And they're all standing there. And they look at their colors and they're marking themselves off. And they feel proud to have their colors. The creator of everything says, since you like your weapons so much, I'm going to put them in your mouths. You can carry them with you always and push their weapons in their mouths. Since you said that you need to run, you got to run and battle. I'm going to give you more legs. I'll give you six. So gave them all six legs. You need to have a huge belly so you can carry food with you when you battle. Gives all the giants a huge belly. The giants are all pleased. And then the creator says, and because you were put here to take care of the earth and take care of everything else around you, and you're not doing that anymore. You're destroying the earth and you're wiping everything out. I'm going to make you all small so that everything you used to eat, now they're going to eat you. So all the giants become frightened. They all run out of the council house. And run out of the council house, they begin to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And they're still here with us today. They still think they're mighty giants. They still build vast cities, but now they hide from the creator's eyes. They build them in trees under the ground. And as they build them on the ground, they still think they're giants and they're powerful. They can pick up things 10 times their weight, drag it around. But now they're all tiny and small. And now they have a new name. They're called ants. In the ants' eyes, there's a warning for all of us, because when ants look at all of us, they see us. And when they look at us, they see that we are the giants now.
Oh, man. I love that, Robert. Yeah, so, I mean, you're going along with that story, and then all of a sudden you said, they're the ants. I thought, wow. And it just kind of hit me. Yeah, it's like they're huge giants brought down to size. That's kind of how they act.
And now we're acting just like they used to. Destroying the earth, not taking care of each other. So I told that story to Jeannie. She says, that's a good story. And I looked at her and says, it came because I saw a little red ant and a little black ant walking by each other. It just popped up. So that story is only about maybe 12 years old. I've been telling it to schools and communities, but I said, here's a story I came up
with. It's a good one. It's very, a lot of symbolism in that too.
Thank you. I tell that to kids because I sit there and says, because they ask, where do these stories come from? The coyote story and the one with a dog running across the sky. We don't know how old they are. They could be thousands of years old.
Oh, yeah.
Passed down orally. But I said, the giant story, I just told you with that. That's probably about 12, 15 years old now.
That's a new one then.
It's a new one. It's
a big. The sound of it, it sounds like it could have been around for thousands of years because ants have been around forever. Just the way you told it, it's that, boy, that could have been told 1,000 years ago, but it's just a 12-year-old story.
So who knows? Maybe 1,000 years from now, still be telling. That'd be cool.
I wouldn't be surprised. These stories, they must get shared between tribes, right? Because you're what, Shawnee, Navajo,
and Cherokee, Navajo, and Apache.
And Apache, that's it. Okay. So I guess there'd be a lot of sharing throughout the country.
We go to various events, and sometimes there are intertribal sessions, there's dancing, and sometimes there are different stories. What I've learned is that for the most part, if I'm going to tell a story that belongs to their tribe, I'll ask permission from the storytellers because it belongs to them.
Oh, yeah.
Sure that this is a story from this tribe, and this is from them. So sometimes they may not want you to share that story because it belongs to them.
But I guess we got to respect that, sure.
Yeah. But the Shawnee chief reminded me something. And when somebody brings that up, says, well, maybe we shouldn't like share, because I said, well, if you don't want to, then here, I'm going to tell you something else that might make you change your mind. Shawnee chief came to me, had me do storytelling for the children, did it at Christmas. When I finished and they're sitting there walking out, she says, thank you so much. The children enjoyed it.
That worked out
so much, but you really need a Shawnee storyteller to tell Shawnee stories to your children. And she looked at me. She says, I know our last storyteller died 15 years ago. Nobody picked it up. And now they're starting to
get. Oh, you know, that's so sad. When the stories go, you know, that's the only way to keep them alive is to hear the stories and keep telling them. So what about in the Cherokee community there? There must be other storytellers. I know there's you and Shuji. Storytelling alive and well in the...
There's a number of other storytellers here. And because of what Shuji and I and Janelle Adair, she's a wonderful storyteller. We've been out there doing stories. Sammy Steele, he's a wonderful storyteller, tells funny stories. Gail Ross, she's another storyteller. She's been to the White House and done storytelling over there.
Gail's been on our show, yes.
Yeah, Gail's been on the show. And she's a wonderful, wonderful storyteller. And we go out there, and there's Sequoia Guest, Jigae-san. He's a friend of mine. For about 20 years, he's passed away now. But he used to tell stories. He liked to tell scary stories. He liked to scare
children. Yeah, I love those.
But he was a wonderful storyteller. I miss him terribly. But I always try to make sure that I tell one of Sequoia's stories when I do programs from time to time. I said, this is a story from a friend of mine, so we'll go into it.
Well, that helps keep him alive.
Helps keep his memory alive.
Okay, that was great, Robert. Now, what, you got any other stories? Let's hear another one.
Okay. Here's one that I'll do with a group of children. Sometimes I'll have girls and boys out there, and they'll come stand up there beside me. And they'll look at me and say, what am I going to be? I said, you're going to be grandpa. Oh, okay. So I sit there. Grandpa was walking through the woods one day. And as he's walking around, he's looking for grandma. I said, where's grandma? Can't find grandma. Oh, there she is. Hey, grandma, what are you doing? Grandma, that's sitting there standing off in the distance, is watching grandpa because grandpa's talking to an old dead tree.
Oh.
Thinking, what's he doing? Starts to walk towards him. He's talking to me, but he's talking to that tree. And grandpa's still looking at that tree saying, come on, grandma, talk to me. Why aren't you talking to me? Are you mad at me again? You're being quiet. Dead tree says nothing. It's the old dead tree. Grandma gets closer and watches that old man. Says, I know what you like, grandma. I'm going to kiss you like I did when we were young. Ooh. So he wraps his arm around a tree and kisses that bark on that tree. Steps back and says, whoa, your lips are kind of chapped, old woman. And grandma says, hey, old man, why are you kissing a tree? Oh, I thought that was you. That's an old scrawny dead tree. You think I look like an old scrawny dead tree?
Ooh.
Looks at the old tree, looks back at grandma, says, well, sometimes in the morning, she says, you watch it, old man. Oh. Come on, go home. We got to get dinner ready. So they're sitting there and they're working on dinner. As they're working on dinner, here comes their son and daughter and their families. And they're all gathering around. The grandkids are running around. The little girls are wanting to help grandma. Little boys are wanting to show grandpa that they can hunt just as good as their dad. And as they're all having this meeting, they're talking. Grandpa looks at the sons and says, how good is that little boy learning? He's supposed to say he can hunt with that bow and arrow. And the dad says, well, I'm trying to teach him, but it's hard for him to pull that bow back. It's made out of hard wood. He has trouble. He says, show me, boy. So that little boy takes that arrow, tries to shoot it, shoots it, ends up shooting it into grandpa's pot of beans. He says, well, you're a bean killer. Look at that. Got a bean end of my arrow. Here. Gives it back to him. At least you can hunt a bean. They start to laugh. And as they're walking around and they're visiting, grandma notices the girls are sitting off in the woods. Says, girl, what are you doing? And all the girls say, look, grandma. And there's rabbit. Jesus, the rabbit's woke up. He sits there and says, I'm hungry. I need some food. Do you think you could give me some food? And the little girls run to grandma, says, grandma, can we feed the cute little bunny rabbit? And grandma says, that rabbit's a trickster. You watch out for that rabbit.
Right.
But I can't say no to you. You're my grandkids. Give him a little bit of beans. Here's some beans, some potatoes. Take it over. So I take it over and that rabbit snarfs it all down. Oh, thank you, Cherokees. I'll remember you. I'll give you a present one day. You're all a bunch of pretty girls. And all girls start grinning. And grandma says, you girls get over here. Get away from that trickster. He causes trouble. Don't you listen to what he's saying. And so that rabbit bounces off into the woods, leaves the Cherokees. Rabbit's going on, says, that meal filled me up. I need some water now. Goes down to the creek. But there's bear blocking the path. Now, rabbit could go on further, but rabbit's determined, says, bear shouldn't be sitting there blocking the path for everybody. Bear should get out of the way. So he walks up the bear and pats bear on the belly. Hey, bear, get your big belly out of my way. I need some water. You're blocking the whole path. I can barely see the water. Bear looks at rabbit and says, you're being rude. You better back up. I'll squash you with my belly. The bear says, I'm eating. Don't bother me. Bear begins to eat some more. Rabbit sits there and goes, fine. He waits for a little while, says, hey, bear. Bear looks at rabbit and says, what? Are you through feeding your face, bear? I need some water. Get your big feet out of my way. Just move them off to the side. I can crawl over your big smelly feet.
Whoa.
Bear stands up and says, oh, I'll squash you with my big feet. You better stop being rude. I'm eating. Don't bother me. Bear eats some more. Rabbit sister for a little while and says, bear, please. Please, can I have some water? Please, I'm dying. I need some water.
Mm-hmm.
Bear says, huh? Well, since you use manners now and you said, please, I'll scoot over. There, go get your water. Rabbit beep-bops on by. But as Rabbit's walking on by, he can't not say something. So as he's walking by, he says, thanks, big, fat, chubby, smelly bear. Bear reaches up, grabs him the ears, pulls Rabbit back and looks at him, says, you're still being rude. Mm-hmm. You look at my face. Do I look happy? Rabbit shakes his head. No, you better watch it. I got my eye on you. Throws Rabbit in the dust. Bear gets off and leaves. Rabbit gets up, dusts himself off, finally gets a drink of water and says, bear was mean. Bear made me wait. Bear didn't care. Bear's too busy feeding his face. He's probably over there sleeping. I can hear him snoring. I know what I'll do. I'll jump on his head. I'll push his face in the mud. I'll kick that big belly of his around. And then Rabbit thinks it through and says, and yeah, and then he'll get up and I'll die. Because Bear's huge and I'm tiny. I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So Rabbit's kicking at the ground, rock, kicks a clump of grass, kicks a piece of river cane. And the river cane makes a hollow sound, bing, as it rolls. Rabbit picks it up and looks through it. River cane's hollow and he can see through it. Says, wow. So he comes up with an idea. He says, I can make a toy out of this. He puts a stick in that piece of river cane, shoots it, blows it out. Stick comes out. Takes a rock in there, puts it in that river cane, blows it out. Rock comes out. Puts a feather in there and shoots it. The feather goes all the way across the creek. Rabbit says, that went far. I need some more feathers. So he gets another feather and shoots it. This one goes right into his tree and sticks. He says, ooh, I got to find another feather. But he can't find any more. He says, well, I'll use this other one that I shot. Picks it up and says, ooh, it's slimy with my spit. I need something else. I'll make my own feather. So Rabbit reaches down, grabs some sticks, and begins to chew on it. Makes one inch sharp. Says, now I need something soft. What's soft? My fur is soft. I rip some fur off my belly. He says, no, my girlfriends will laugh at me. I rip my fur off my head. Nah, look like skunk. I don't want to look like skunk. I rip my fur off my bottom. I don't see my bottom. Tear some fur off. Ties it on the end of that stick. Makes the first dart. Shoots it. Sticks in the tree. Rabbit says, oh, I need more sticks. I got to make more of these. Gets a whole bunch of sticks, sharpens them all, and says, I can't take any more fur. I'll be bald back there. I'll freeze when I set on the snow. I need something. Rabbit goes off into the woods, finds a thistle plant growing on the woods. Thistle's a pretty purple flowered plant, has thorns all over it, considered a noxious weed. Farmers hate it, but Cherokees like it because of what Rabbit did next. Rabbit got all that fur and looked at all that fluff from that there thistle plant, says, looks like my fur. Pulls all that out, gets rid of the seeds, ties it on all those darts, and practices all day shooting. At the end of the day, when Rabbit's got his shot down, he says, where's Bear? He goes back, and Bear's out there sleeping. Rabbit takes the first aim and shoots. Goes right past Bear's ear. Bear wakes up and says, hey, something went by my ear. Like a whisper. I think it's my girlfriend whispering in my ear. Where you at, baby? Come here and kiss me. So Bear stands up looking for his girlfriend. Rabbit takes the next start, names. Goes right past Bear's face, and Bear says, hey, my girlfriend's throwing flowers at me. I better pick it up. She'd be mad if I don't have her gift. So Bear bends over to pick up the flower. And when he bends over, his big behind gets up in the sky. And Rabbit goes, oh, there's my target. Aims again. Bear jumps up and says, hey, who shot me in the bottom? Somebody's going to die. Pulls up that dart and looks at it. The whole forest goes quiet. Nobody wants a bear match. But Rabbit's laying in the corner giggling. Nah, that was so funny. He jumped so high. Bear hears somebody out there giggling and says, you're behind those trees and bushes. I catch you. You're going to die. Bear charges. Rabbit goes, whoa, and takes off running. Now, everybody's seen a rabbit run at least once in their life. Rabbits run pretty fast and pretty quick. But bears run fast when they're really mad. And this bear's really, really, really mad. But all Bear can see is a piece of river cane being taken to their brush and can't tell who's carrying it. Rabbit can hear Bear closing in and says, I'm going to get caught. I'm going to die. He's going to kill me. Rabbit comes running out and sees all those Cherokees still out there, cut their dinner, having food. Takes that last dart, runs right up to the Cherokees, says, Cherokees, look at this. Shoots that dart by their feet. All the Cherokees stand up and say, hey, we fed you. Why are you shooting at us? Rabbit says, I'm not. I brought you a present. Here, happy birthday. Bye. Takes off running. The Cherokees pick it up and the dad looks at the grandpa and says, let me see that dart. Puts it in there and shoots it. And then calls his sons and daughters, come here, try this. And they all shoot and they can stick it in a tree. They look at each other and say, hey, now we have something to teach little boys and girls how to stealth and get their hunting skills going. This will work before they get the bow and arrow. And while they're looking at that blowgun and dart, Bear comes tearing over the top of the hill, sees all the Cherokees, sees the darts, sees the blowgun and says, aha, one of you Cherokees shot me in the bottom. Whoa. Y'all gonna die. All those Cherokees stand up, pull out their bows and arrows, and they point them at Bear. Bear looks at all of them and says, it's too many of you. I'll get you one day. You got the blowgun. You got the dart. I find you. Grr. Bear goes back to the woods. And this is where the Cherokees got our blowgun and dart from that rabbit.
Ah.
Like the blowguns and darts. And so I tell those kids at schools, I said, so if you ever go to a museum and you see a piece of river cane sitting there, and this is years down the road when you finally met the one and you have your own child, and you're sitting there looking at the river cane, that dart, and that little boy or girl is going to say, Daddy, Mama, what is that? You say, that's a piece of river cane. What's they use that for? They shoot that dart through that. Where'd they come up with that idea? And then you can say they got it from a bear and a rabbit.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's a great one. You know, I can see how that really appeals to children, but that appeals to children and adults alike, stories like that.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll take a dart because I know how to tie darts, or blowgun darts. I'll set it and I'll demonstrate how to do it in part of the story. Before COVID, we let them have a blowgun. We actually let them shoot it, but now I'm the only one who gets to shoot it.
yes. Kind of ruined everything, hasn't it, COVID?
Yes.
So you actually have the darts there before COVID anyway, and they would utilize the darts
girl shoot that dart out.
So do they still use blow darts, or is that just kind of gone by the wayside?
They still use them. There was a man, his name Chester Ossowee. Harry Ossowee is relative. He's a national treasure as a sculptor. But Chester Ossowee, he only had like half an arm. He's born that way, half an arm. But he still would hunt. He still learned how to make blowguns and darts. And he would still hunt with them. Well, and he'd take it. He'd still go into Kansas and hunt turkeys.
Wow. Well, how big are these blowguns?
The blowguns can vary in length, anywhere between 4 to 6 feet is common here in Oklahoma. Now, the southeastern part of the United States around Cherokee, North Carolina, they make theirs longer. Theirs might be like 7 to 8 to 12 feet long.
I'm envisioning these like a few inches long. You're talking about big blow darts.
Talking about the little table length blowgun.
And just rabbits. We're talking about bears. Feet. Okay.
Yeah. And the darts, they're designed to hunt turkeys, things like that, squirrels. They're made from bordark. It's the wood of the bow. It's a translation in French.
It's incredible, Robert, that you'd have to have a lot of air to blow that big of a dart through that big of a.
Yeah. That little tubes go all the way down. So have a lot of hot air to shoot that thing.
A lot of hot air. It's a good good pastime for storytellers, huh? Okay, Robert. Well, we don't got a whole lot more time here, but we probably have enough time for another story. If there's one come to mind now that just coming from your heart you'd like to tell.
Yeah. Some of the storytellers I've talked to, one of them, he's no longer with us. He was once deputy chief of the Cherokee Nation. Hastings Shade was his name. He was a wonderful storyteller, but a national treasure as a fish gig maker. And he knew I told stories, and he was sitting there and goes, are you coming up with some new ones? I said, well, I'm trying some new ones. He said, I heard our old stories. We need to come up with some new ones. So I came up with this one. Rabbit Jistu comes running out of a burrow one time. He comes crawling out and says, I'm thirsty. I need some water. When Rabbit comes up, he sees dust. There's nothing but dust everywhere. And as he's seen, he looks and sees all the animals in the world are running. Every animal you can think of is running as fast as they can. Rabbit says, whoa, something bad's going down. So Rabbit starts running. He runs and he runs. He catches up with Turtle. Turtle's running as fast as Turtle can. He says, Turtle, why are you running? Turtle says, I don't know. I woke up this morning. Squirrel landed on my head, scratched my shell. Took off running. Go ask Squirrel. Rabbit says, okay. So Rabbit runs ahead. Sees Squirrel bebopping along, that big old tail, bushy, bouncing back and forth, and runs up. Says, Squirrel, why are you running? Squirrel says, I don't know. I woke up this morning. Fox bumped into me. Took off running. Go ask the fox. So Rabbit runs ahead. Catches up with Fox. Fox running as fast as he can. Says, Fox, why are you running? Fox says, I don't know. I woke up this morning. Wolf ran into me. Go ask the wolf. I don't know. He's running up ahead. Go ask. Rabbit runs ahead. Catches up with wolf. Wolf, why are you running? Bear ran into me. Go ask bear. So runs ahead. Bear, why are you running? Bear says, the deer ran over me, stepped on me. Go ask the deer. They're ahead. Rabbit sees the deer running as fast as they can and sees nobody else in front of them. So Rabbit runs. Catches up with the deer and says, deer, why are you running? Deer says, look at the trees, Rabbit. So Rabbit looks ahead. All the trees in the forest had pulled their roots out of the ground. All of the trees were running. And Rabbit goes, whoa, that's bad. So Rabbit runs ahead, catches up with the trees, and says, Forest, why are you running? And Forest looks at Rabbit and says, I just felt like running. Rabbit stopped and let Forest run on and says, run, Forest, run.
Oh, man. Run, Forest, run.
More of the stories. Just because everybody else does it doesn't mean you have to do it, too.
I love that one. Robert, that is an instant classic. Run, Forrest, run.
Run, oh, Forrest. Yeah. It works if you've seen Forrest Gump. It was pretty good.
Yeah, we've all seen that pretty much.
Right. Yeah, I was at a restaurant in Tahlequah eating with a friend of mine. She was sitting there looking at me. And I kept looking behind her. There's a sculpture in the back of that restaurant. And there's a sculpture, horses running. And she says, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking at the sculpture. So she turns around. She looks at it and says, there's horses. And I said, yeah. She says, they're running. And I said, yeah. And if we'd gone and talked about anything else, nothing else would have happened. Mm-hmm. But then she said, huh, I wonder where they're going. My brain kicked off. Ted, where are you going? That's Bill. Bill, why are you running? I don't know. Let's go ask Stephen. Stephen, what's going on? Let's go ask Charlie. She put her spoon down and says, you got to do better than that, Mr. Storyteller. Don't use lame dad jokes, not Charlie Horse. Come on. Use traditional animals. I said, okay. Bear, why are you running? Let's go ask Squirrel. Squirrel, where are you running? I don't know. Let's go ask Rabbit. You know, and, Forrest, why are you running? She went, oh, no. I said, yes, it works. It does.
So you formulated that story sitting there right there.
Right there. We're having dinner.
I tell you, Robert, that's an instant classic. Run, Forrest. And there's also there's a lesson to that story. There's a moral, you know. Don't just follow the crowd. Nobody knew why they were running.
Yeah, they were just all running.
Well, we got to run.
Hopefully one day when I do storytelling and I pull people out, I want to get Mr. Tom Hanks out here and make him give
that. That would be so. I would love to see that someday. Maybe we'll send him a tape of this radio show. Maybe he'll catch wind of that.
Okay, work it out. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, one thing, you know, we've had your cousin Shuji on a couple times, two or three times. And someday I would love to get the two of you on the same show. I don't know if it'll ever happen.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be funny.
Well, that would be quite a show, I would think. Because I see a lot of you and Shuji, and I see a lot of you and him. So that would be a riot to get the two of you together. Do you ever tell stories with him? Do you ever travel with him?
Together. He plays flute. And he starts to tell stories and I tell stories. We go back and forth. We still actually work in a Trail of Tears drama together. We're in the theater for a little while together.
Well, Robert, I've enjoyed all your stories here today. It's good to have you. I've heard about you. Never had you on the show before, but it's good to have you here. We're getting a little short on time, but I want the listeners to know, if they want to know more about you, you have videos out, you have other broadcasts and so forth. All they need to do is Google your name, Robert Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, but go Robert Lewis Storyteller, and they'll find out a lot about you. Videos.
Yes. Yeah, they'll be on videos and things like that I've seen.
Yeah, I think you're the first guy who didn't have a book to sell, so, but just... Okay, Robert. Well, thanks again so much for being here, and good luck to you in all your storytelling endeavors.
All right. Thank you so much. Hope we can do this again.
That would be great. Thank you.
Well, that's our show for tonight. We're going to ease on out of here tonight with some more of Chin's flute music. This song is called Echoes of the Heart. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. This is Eric Keen, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Community Media 90.1 KPFT Houston has brought its listeners nearly 53 years of commercial-free content from your friends and neighbors. We recently launched a new studio home located at 4504 Caroline Street, Houston, in the Upper Museum District. We serve the community in many ways, and in return, they have provided the support for the idea that we need a local voice. Today, we use that voice to reach out to you and ask that you bring canned and other shelf-stable food to supply the Manor Food Pantry of Third Ward, located just blocks from here. We will be collecting food here at KPFT Station from Wednesday, January 25th through Sunday, January 29th. We request that you bring a donation of a cash or food contribution of at least $20 to help those in need in our own community. Again, that's at 4504 Caroline Street. Let's work together to stamp out... Relevant.